in the proposed findings.
Good afternoon. It is 2:02 p.m. on Monday, January 22nd, 2018. This is a work session in the North Dakota Public Service Commission. I'm Commission Chairman Randy Christman. With me are Commissioners Brian Krasius and Julie Fedorchak. This work session is on case number PU-17-284, which is the Foxtail Wind sighting case. We held a hearing on this on November 20th of 2017. And I don't have any opening comments. Brian, do you?
I do not.
I'll turn it over to you, Julie. It's your portfolio, I believe. So.
It is. All right, so at the conclusion of, doesn't sound like I'm, yeah, I am. At the conclusion of the hearing, there was a number of late filed exhibits that were requested, and I think it's probably the best way to proceed today would just be to go through those various exhibits and talk about what was filed and offer any thoughts or questions that we might have. So, Brian, do you want to walk us through all that?
Sure. There were late filed exhibits that were filed. The ones I'm going to focus on are exhibits number 30 and exhibits number 30 and 31. There was also a wildlife consultation strategy, an updated one that was filed as exhibit number 29. And it appears that that updated wildlife consultation strategy is something that was also sent to U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service based on the correspondence that we have here. I'll start with exhibit number 30. This is a letter that addressed a variety of the concerns that were raised at the administrative hearing in this matter that were raised by U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service.
And that was from their letter, which was Exhibit 24.
Correct. And what the company did is they took the comments that were highlighted during the hearing from the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service letter, put those in bold italic font on here, and then the company submitted their response to each one of those concerns under the bold and italic font, I guess, and theirs is just in regular font. But essentially what it appears to really boil down to is U.S. Fish and Wildlife seems to acknowledge in certain spots on in this correspondence that some of the regulations and some of the comments that they made were things that they're in the process of developing. Foxtail's essentially taking the position that their studies weren't necessarily incorrect. They did amend some of their findings, and they put them into that exhibit number 29, that wildlife consultation strategy, which is about 133 pages. They made some changes based on U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service's recommendations and did update their plan to address some of their concerns. A lot of this is just based on, I think there's some terminology issues between what Foxtail put in their report and what U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service interpreted their report to be, and this letter clarifies a lot of those issues. It is noteworthy that there was an email received from U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service that was submitted as a supplement to exhibit number 30. And this is from Kevin Shelley. And it's basically an endorsement of the project. It states, and if you look at the last sentence, it states, therefore, the Fish and Wildlife Service will continue working with the company and the state as needed to finalize a product in January of 2018. So by looking at what we have with this exhibit number 30 and then the supplement to exhibit number 30, it appears there has been an ongoing collaborative effort between U.S. Fish and Wildlife and Foxtail to address the concerns that were raised at the administrative hearing.
Seems to me in that letter, that email, the key line is, the Fish and Wildlife Service remains in general agreement with the framework contained in the WCS and believes, based on the observed commitment of the company, that a mutual agreement to characterize the impacts can be achieved. And the U.S., you know, and then the WCS is a useful framework to provide the, you know, needed predictability for regulatory review processes. and assessing the impacts of energy development in North Dakota. So, yeah, I mean, I read that to say it's still a work in progress, but we're okay with moving ahead.
Yeah, and I guess I kind of interpreted it to say that the wildlife conservation strategy is a necessary piece of information, and the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service acknowledges that. There may be some things that they disagree on between what the company has submitted and what Fish and Wildlife Service believes are maybe the perfect way of going about constructing this, but the two entities are working together to try to reach a solution. That's, I guess, essentially what I took from the combination of exhibit number 30 and then the supplement to exhibit number 30.
I mean, this is always difficult for us when we're being told one thing by a company and a different thing by experts that we rely on for input. And the company's letter basically just said they just kind of refuted the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service and said that the way they did it to begin with was right. And so, I mean, we really didn't get an answer to many of the questions at U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. But the fact that they followed up with this letter saying we're going to keep working on this and we think that the company's committed to making it right, then that's, I mean, that's all I need, really, to move ahead from that particular one. And the Game and Fish is kind of additional to that.
Yeah, and I guess I took this supplement to exhibit number 30 to kind of soften the letter that was initially included in the exhibits and say we're actually working together on this. We do see that there are some potential issues here. Obviously, we have two entities that don't fully agree on the studies that were performed, but it doesn't sound like U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service is in any rush to block this project from happening.
Yep. I mean, I hope it's clear to these agencies that we rely on their expertise. We're not going to question what they're saying beyond with our own different opinions or analysis. So if they've got issues, they've got to speak up, because once they say that they're working and they've got a path forward together with the company, that's what we need.
Understood. Is there anything else that the commission would like addressed on the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service issue?
I don't have any other issues to you guys.
Not really specifically, but maybe later as it regards the whole case.
With that, I'll turn to exhibit number 31, which is a letter from Foxtail Wind to the Public Service Commission addressing the concerns that are raised by North Dakota Game and Fish. And
do you have another card? I have the Game and Fish response.
20th.
So you have the supplement to exhibit 31?
Yeah, that's what you're...
Yep.
Well, there's Exhibit 31, and then there's a supplement to Exhibit 31. Exhibit 31 is a, I think it's an 11.
I don't seem to have 31.
Oh, I don't either, actually.
11-page letter. It was filed.
31 was the same as 30, but it addressed fish and wildlife concerns.
Oh, game and fish concerns.
Game and fish concerns.
Oh, okay. Oh, shoot. All right.
The format of them is almost identical.
Yeah.
So when I first looked at it, I kind of I thought they just double-filed it, but they do address some different concerns. I guess I could circulate my copy if you...
I could make a copy, too, if you want.
I'm just curious about the pieces on the native prairie.
Yep.
Game and Fish's response to that.
Yes, and that brings up, I think, which was kind of the main issue that arose from the late-filed exhibits. And if we look at the supplement to exhibit number 31, it's the response to North Dakota Game and Fish. And there was some discussion about this offset package during the hearing. Mm-hmm. And from what I understood, the company was working with U.S. Fish and Wildlife as well as North Dakota Game and Fish to develop some type of an offset package to offset the native prairie lands that were going to be disturbed as a result of this project. And North Dakota Game and Fish did address that in their December 20th, 2017 response. But if you go to the last paragraph on the first page of that letter, it states that NextEra has committed to a financial contribution for long-term on-the-ground offsets for the direct disturbance of 293.6 acres and indirect disturbance of 2,004.5 acres resulting from the Foxtail project. This equates to less than 60% of the economic value of acreage, which was based on $500 per acre, recommended for offsets by the department. However, because a comprehensive framework for determining offsets has not been completely developed and finalized, full compensation of impacts on this project would not be reasonable at this time. Now, after receiving this letter, I did follow up with Foxtail's attorney to just get some, I guess, additional insight as to what does this mean? What's this offset package? What's it going to be used for? How did you come up with this $500 an acre deal?
And so is it $500 an acre or 60% of $500 an acre?
They said it comes to, they would say $500 an acre normally, but in this case they're willing to settle for, they don't give us an exact number, but they told us it's in the neighborhood of 60%. I think that's
60% of $500 an acre.
I think there's two ways of reading this.
Yeah.
I think one way is to say that they're charging it at 60% of the acres. The other way is to say they're charging it at 60% of the $500 per acre. But I don't think, I mean, it's a distinction without a difference. So it really boils down to it. I think the dollar amount would be the same.
Okay.
And I guess just getting into this a little bit deeper, and the information I got is the $500 per acre value agreed to by Foxtail Wind and Game and Fish was based on input from the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. In particular, the price per acre was based on land values. Fish and Wildlife had experience in administering the Calm Wetland Management District in Dickey, Lemoore, Logan, and McIntosh counties in North Dakota. So it sounds like it was based off of some precedent to come up with this $500 per acre. And then they indicate that Foxtail and North Dakota Game and Fish are still finalizing the recipient of payment for the on-the-ground native prairie grass offsets and are pursuing options suggested by Fish and Wildlife with prior successful experience in delivering conservation offsets funded by energy companies. And they expect Foxtail to figure out where that money's going to go in early 2018. And I haven't received anything further stating where that money specifically will go. I think there's a few different conservation entities that may be recipients of that. I don't know who ended up getting the money as a result of that Calm Wetland Management District project, which sounds like they had an offset put in place for that as well.
What is the $500? Can you repeat where that comes from again?
Sure.
Price point?
It was based on input from U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, and it was based on land values that Fish and Wildlife had experience in administering the Calm Wetland Management District.
It just doesn't even seem remotely possible. I haven't heard of $500 per acre land in North Dakota for a number of years.
I don't think they meant that to be the purchase price of the land.
Yeah, I saw the two words economic value, so I don't know.
Yeah.
I'm just curious.
And I don't know if that's
more than anything.
If they're saying that this would reduce the value of native prairie land by $500 per acre and that's what they're trying to do is just make it whole, I don't know.
Or yeah, perhaps
I don't know if economic value is return on land over a period of 10 years, or I don't know how they.
It might have some sort of a conservation easement as well, value attached to it.
No, that's fine. It's just curiosity.
But I guess in sum, with respect to Exhibit 31 and the supplement to Exhibit 31, Game and Fish indicated that they believe the project should move forward.
Did you read this letter to say that they agreed on it for this project and that's final, or that it might change as they more fully develop this formula?
I read it as the 60% number in this was what North Dakota Game and Fish thought to be fair because the framework hadn't been completed yet when they put this project together. So since this was in the works when they put this project together, but not a finalized number that had been constructed, that they said this sounds like a fair compromise and we'd be okay with it.
Okay, so that's how I read it too, that Game and Fish suggested one thing and the company came back and they settled on 60% of that, what Game and Fish had recommended.
That's
maybe
reading between the lines. I think that's probably what happened here, but I have no documentation or, and there's nothing in the record to support that hypothesis.
Well, I have to say, not so much the wind farm itself, but this whole thing, I fear us getting into a precedent here that I'm not happy with, and that's that every wind farm, every pipeline, every power line, some of these wildlife groups are going to come along, and once we've started doing this, not that it's necessarily the case here, but in future case, it'll be a chance to extort money out of the company for every little project that we cite. And then the money goes to groups that we have no control over, and heaven knows what they do with it. I guess at the time when we were down in the hearing, I was thinking they were going to, you know, take some measures to get good grass started in the rights of way and things like that to offset it. And now when we start dishing out money to unnamed groups that no North Dakota agency is even involved in the choosing, it's going to be the Fish and Wildlife Service, I'm really nervous about this becoming a precedent for other cases.
You know, they've been doing this for a long time. Used to be we would have a siting hearing, and if they had agreed to fund some conservation easements or something like that, then there was a couple of times the Fish and Wildlife showed up at the hearing and said what great guys they were. Other times if they weren't agreeing to it, Fish and Wildlife Service wasn't happy with them. And that habitat conservation plan for whooping cranes was the same kind of thing. If they were participating in that plan, what it really meant was they were paying money to get conservation set-aside lands to assist with the whooping crane. Well, so it's been an approach with them.
I'm not a plan of getting into a situation where you have wildlife groups that can then take this money and go back down there and rent land away from egg producers because they get a bunch of tax-free money. I would much, if they need to do something conservation-wise because they're disrupting the wildlife down there, I'd prefer that we're saying what that is. And that then they go in and do that. And if that's similar to another case we had working with soil conservation districts and planting a certain number of trees or something like that, I even wouldn't even mind so much if it were directly working with Game and Fish on, you know, plots, land, or things that are state-controlled. But these unnamed groups involving Fish and Wildlife, that's not a state agency. I'm not very comfortable with this.
I think that the Fish and Wildlife and Game and Fish would tell you that that is their strategy. Is there's going to be some disturbance from these projects in areas that they're taking away from the wildlife habitat, and in exchange for that, I mean, there's no way around it with these projects. They're going to do that. And so in exchange for that, there's an agreement or some kind of an effort to make sure that some land is preserved for habitat and stuff. One of the big things has been fragmenting of grasslands. If you put a path down the middle of it, like a road down the middle of a grassland, the animals are going to use the road rather than back in the grassland areas, and so it kind of subtracts away from their natural habitat and the way things are done naturally. So these groups don't like it. Putting in the turbines and stuff like that also kind of fractures their habitats. And, with grasslands, you know, it's not an avoidance area. And there's also not anything that stops farmers from just plowing them under. And so these kind of things, if they can do some set-asides, then they can pay some money to the farmers or something to put some kind of an easement in there that they can't plow them under. And that it's kind of like, I think, the rest of their programs for wetlands and stuff like that. They get an easement in there and the area is preserved. And so I think that's one option that they do. But
remember, when they preserve it, it comes out of production for somebody else who was going to farm it.
Yep.
And we're still an ag state. And
same way with CRP.
Yep.
Well, really, the siting law requires these factors to be considered. And so they're being considered and looked at, and the experts have said this is a problem. And so short of saying you can't do this project, we can't make these impacts, this is the compromise. I see it as, you know, the agency's trying to find a path forward to allow for the development while also being responsible with maintaining, you know, quality environments for all the other natural resources that North Dakotans, including farmers and ranchers, appreciate and love. So it's a balance, and it's never going to be perfect, but I think that I share your concern on the unnamed groups and not knowing where it goes. I just don't know that we have the jurisdiction to tell them where we want it to be or provide that. I mean, do we, Brian?
There's nothing in the statute. I'm not aware of any case law saying that this is even necessarily in the realm of the Public Service Commission to be directing where funds go in the event of an offset like this.
Yeah.
I know what we've done in previous cases that I've worked on where we've had issues raised by U.S. Fish and Wildlife Services just puts a stipulation in the order that this is at the, you know, we're okay with this as long as U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service is, basically saying this meets our siting criteria. You can get your certificate as long as you comply with the restrictions that U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service or North Dakota Game and Fish or whomever has put on this project, as they do have some say in this as well.
Mm-hmm. Seems odd. So going back to, we can't dictate where the money goes, but in effect, we can have this as a requirement?
Well, I guess it depends on what, when you're saying have this as a requirement, if you're talking about specifically the offset, I think there would be some issue with the Public Service Commission saying that you have to funnel this money to whatever, Ducks Unlimited or whatever organization may be out there.
Agreed.
But as far as saying your permit is conditioned upon approval of this project by U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service or by North Dakota Game and Fish, I know that we have, and I believe it might even be in the certificate that they signed, that they have to comply with all other governmental agencies.
Mm-hmm.
So to the extent that another government agency would raise an issue with this, that could come into play with the validity of the certificate based off of what they agreed to in the certification.
And their North Dakota Game and Fish is recommending.
And they're voluntary. It
says,
When I don't see this as a requirement, I see this as these agencies raise these issues.
Yeah.
We said to the company, tell us how you're going to mitigate these issues with these agencies and how it gets worked out. It could have been any number of things. I was thinking more along the lines of Randy, that it would be that the offsets would be designated land that they'd found or something that was more specific and clear. But I guess I don't really feel that it's that I have the expertise to tell them what that offset should be or how they should mitigate these issues. They're the biologists. They're the ones that raised it. It's part of the siting criteria. They say it's addressed to their satisfaction. I'm okay with that. But if we had a way to be more directive on or to share those concerns with Game and Fish, that, you know, keep working on something that's a little more specific and state directed, that would be wise in our opinion. I share that concern, Randy. I think that's very valid.
I think it, well, let me ask this. Assuming this goes forward, how are things laid out if the wildlife groups, whether it's Game and Fish or Fish and Wildlife, see, oh, now we got money by just objecting to this for a group that we like to work with, can they just claim damages to anything? Any project we ever cite does disrupt something. And so can they always claim that and count on getting a settlement? Or is there something that we can provide here that's unique to this in the amount of uninterrupted grasslands that are being disturbed or something like that?
And I think that that's a little bit of a hypothetical. And the reason I say that is because the way I understand this offset to work is the money never goes directly to North Dakota Game and Fish or to the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. It's a offset program that's approved by that governmental agency. And as part of that, there's an agreement as to which organization would get that money. So, you know, to the extent that Game and Fish is saying, we're going to raise a stink about every single project that's coming in because we're getting additional funds off of it, I don't think that's reality necessarily.
Not them, but
right, but
they like working with
that. Yeah, and you know, I definitely agree that those are the optics of this to some extent. Is there a risk of that happening on every project moving forward? I don't know. I would defer to the commission on that, as you guys obviously see more of these than I do. This is the first time I've run into this offset thing in any of the siting cases that I've had. And that's also it's a policy consideration, more so, I think, on your part as far as the legal aspects of it go. I don't see necessarily any problem with the company have running into some type of an issue with the government agency and coming to some type of resolution to appease that government agency. With respect to how that plays into our jurisdiction over this, I view it kind of as a secondary issue that's, I mean, is it related to the siting criteria? Indirectly, yes. But we have stipulations in all of our orders that you have to comply with the rules and regulations of these other local and state agencies. With respect to this offset, and Jerry made a very good point, the way I understand it from the correspondence we received is this is part of a voluntary compliance regulatory scheme that they have. It's not necessarily mandated, and I think that the company might be doing this to not necessarily agitate these state agencies. I don't know. It's not, the record we have isn't completely clear on that issue, at least in my opinion.
It doesn't seem like it would be a requirement, going back to the words recommend that NextEra do X, Y, and Z. They're not saying, they're not instructing, they're recommending.
That's how I understood it as well. And I think that was part of where we ended up running into some confusion maybe at the administrative hearing on this, is the witness they had who went up and testified talked about how their studies complied with the existing regulatory scheme that U.S. Fish and Wildlife had, or that North Dakota Game and Fish had, I think was primarily U.S. Fish and Wildlife, and now they're putting together these recommended stipulations, and I believe she used the term moving the goalposts during her testimony. I think some of that's due to some of the evolving information that's come out since 2015 with respect to that. So the way I understood the late filed exhibits is we have these new recommended policies that we're putting in place, and we'd really like you to adhere to them. And Foxtail is saying we're trying our best to adhere to these. These weren't necessarily required for us to do. We've met all the requirements that these government agencies have of us, and therefore our project should be able to go forward. That, I guess, is a kind of just a summation of what I glean from the additional evidence that we have.
So are you feeling that it's not a requirement and we don't even need to address it in our order?
With respect to the offset?
Yeah.
I think that's a route we could go.
It is addressed in the proposed order, but I wondered whether we should take it out.
We have to address the issues that were raised. I mean, I don't care exactly how specific we get, but the issues that were raised during the hearing and through the testimony that was provided by these groups and how it was addressed.
And I guess with
that it was addressed.
And with respect to something like that, I would leave it up to the commission's discretion as to how specific you want to get with addressing those things.
To me, this is exactly what siting is. It's a balance. It's a balancing act. And if we never provide any balance, then what's the point of siting? Just acknowledging, yep, go ahead, do it the way you planned. I mean, that's what the whole process is intended to be. There are impacts to development. How are you going to mitigate them? That's where we get to the, you know, you can have economic growth and development, and you can maintain the environment and preserve it long term for generations. And so I think this type of thing is just right at the crux of what siting's all about.
They did a pretty good job in the order and what they put in there, if you want to check it out.
Yeah, I read the order. I thought it was pretty straightforward. Yeah. I have to look. It was a couple weeks ago I read it, but so I have to read it, refresh myself. But
yeah, we, when they've done this in the past with this kind of a thing, we've not addressed it in the order. We've just said that you know, they were working with Fish and Wildlife or something like that. Mm-hmm.
What did they say in this one?
There's three or four findings in here. It starts out with 49.
This is next era's proposed order.
Yeah. And, for instance, I'll read a little bit of it. U.S. Fish and Wildlife and North Dakota Game and Fish have articulated an industry-led collaborative referred to as the North Dakota Wind and Wildlife Collaborative is in the process of developing, but is not yet completed, an approach to protection of wildlife and native habitat that addresses avoidance, minimization, and offsets where appropriate. In light of this effort, Foxtail Wind is coordinated with Game and Fish and Fish and Wildlife with respect to potential mitigation measures and has finalized its WCS, submitted as late file exhibit 29. The WCS outlines Foxtail's commitment to continue efforts to demonstrate due diligence in avoiding and minimizing impacts to wildlife, avian, and bat species and associated with development and operation of the project. A key component of the WCS is a commitment to offer a voluntary offset for impacts to native prairie that were unavoidable after all avoidance and minimization efforts were implemented. 51 Foxtail's agreement to provide voluntary offsets has been memorialized in an agreement between Foxtel and the North Dakota Game and Fish Department, pursuant to which Foxtel will make a payment to the North Dakota Natural Resource Trust for the purpose of implementing long-term, on-the-ground native prairie conservation actions. Foxtel has and will continue to address concerns raised by Fish and Wildlife and Game and Fish regarding mitigating the potential impacts of the project as set forth in late filed exhibits 29, 30, and 31.
Resource Trust Agency is a pretty good spot.
Who is that?
Is it quasi-government? The governor appoints the members. There might be some that are spelled out in law as to who's on there, but they have trust funds that they give out in grants to organizations that apply to them. And they have a pretty broad, my dad was a member for probably 20 years and served on the board. And they met and discussed the grants. So he represented, I think, landowners. So they have kind of a broad scope in terms of who sits on it. And
how often has this been included in other citing cases?
This would be the first time.
Okay.
That I'm aware of.
Yeah, that we've said anything about it.
So, in effect, it sets a precedence.
They met with us.
There's been offsets before, though, on other things.
And there was a bunch of agencies, Game and Fish, Fish and Wildlife, and some others that came and met with us and told us about this collaborative that they had working back last summer, I think it was.
In this case?
No, it was just generically. They came in and told us about it.
And there are ways to address this without making it necessarily binding on the company. I mean, we can say that the company has represented that they're doing this, and put it as a finding of fact, just to acknowledge that it happened. It doesn't mean that, just means that that's part of the facts of this case. That doesn't necessarily mean that we're putting it into our order or anything like that, that you have to deposit this money or that you have to follow Game and Fish or U.S. Fish and Wildlife's recommendation as to where this money goes. I mean, there's ways to do that without necessarily setting a precedent, but still acknowledging the existence of this collaborative effort between the company and the agencies.
And that is kind of the way it's done here.
That's almost what it's, and I didn't bring that copy with me, but it almost sounded like what they had written in that.
Yes.
What the numbers that Jerry had read.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And just looking at it, I believe that was their intent.
There is an ordering paragraph 10 that Foxtel Wind shall adhere to the terms of the agreement between Foxtel and Game and Fish, pursuant, will make payment to blah blah blah. So we could take 10 out if.
I would leave that up to the discretion of the commission as to what type of precedent you wish to set. But as far as I'm aware, that there is no precedent for mandating some type of contribution to an offset.
In 51, it even refers to it as Foxtel's agreement to provide voluntary offsets.
Yeah.
So, do you guys have any other thoughts on these issues?
I don't at the moment, no.
Brian, do you, Attorney Brian, was there anything in specific on the updated site plan maps we should be looking at? I don't recall there being any specific issues.
Nothing.
My notes don't either, but.
Yeah, nothing that I saw in here raised a red flag that I don't think has been discussed before. If you look at it, the way they broke this up, looks like they have a map of the 11 sections that they have identified for this project, and then the first, I guess, would be 11 pages deal with the decibel study that was done.
Mm-hmm.
And I know there's a lot of testimony about that at the hearing, and it appears that the second portion of these maps has essentially the same information on it.
I mean, the public was very supportive of this project there, the community, so really the only issues were the ones that we've been discussing, if I recall. Am I recalling correctly? Even the cultural resource stuff had been largely addressed. And
yes, with the cultural resource, there was a lot of discussion with the tribes,
mm-hmm.
and it sounded like
the consultation.
Yep. Another thing that is noteworthy is they did file their waiver for the decibel. Mm-hmm. I think there were two residents that had over 50, and those waivers were filed as late filed exhibits.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I'm ready to look at a revised order, Jerry, if you want to take the companies and revise it and then maybe get it around to you guys. Would that work for you? Then you can really look at the language and see what you think and work with Jerry on tweaking it or making additional changes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
So
that
I will.
Was not Attorney Brian saying yes.
Wait, I have a question, though.
I would take out that ordering paragraph 10 then.
What was that?
It said that they had to fulfill those payment agreements. I don't think we should order that, really. I like Brian's idea that we just find it, that they've committed to it.
I believe it's the last paragraph.
Oh, make it contingent on that happening.
10 orders them to do it, to do what they said they would.
Mm. I don't know. I want to think about that a little myself.
Okay.
My initial reaction is I would be fine with taking it out, but different question. No, I lost it here.
I think. Well,
sorry. At one point, I just made a handwritten note in the hearing. There was this distinction being made between high-quality grasslands and moderate-quality prairie. Is there some... Do we have some kind of official definition that determines that, or is that just the company's opinion?
Well, there's kind of some kind of a practice that comes out of the industry, and I don't know if Fish and Wildlife or who, but somehow or other they're getting definitions of what's...
Who's they?
The company here in their WCS plan. And in their letters responding to the concerns of Fish and Wildlife, they talk about what is excellent quality and what is good quality. And there's talk of what grazing does to it, whether or not a lightly grazed parcel is just good or if it's excellent. And there's some discussions that go on with what is those classifications that's in the WCS document.
I think specifically if you turn to page 3 of exhibit number 31, there's some further explanation as to what Jerry was alluding to. It's confusing.
It's basically what they said in their testimony. It's a rehash of that.
Essentially, and that's kind of what I was alluding to earlier when I said I think there was some discrepancies in terminology between what they used in their report and what U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service deemed it to be. They described the methodology on this page 3 of Exhibit 31, and it seems like they base pretty much everything off of the habitat needs of the Sprague's pipit.
Right.
Yeah, and Dakota Skipper.
So I left that with the company says there is a distinction and these agencies don't see a distinction. So, again, kind of in the area of going to figure that out. They have to come up with the solution for addressing the issues that are inherent in this project.
I viewed it as a difference in definitions.
Mm-hmm.
We we circle back, or maybe we're still on it in some sense. Is number 10, is it staying or is it getting pulled?
I think that Julie wanted to look at it a little bit more and see what she thought.
Here's a couple thoughts on it. The language says, shall adhere to the terms of the agreement. It's really not an agreement when the letter from North Dakota Game and Fish is recommending.
Right, and the other issue with that is there's no agreement that's been made part of the record.
Right.
In this case.
Mm-hmm. So there is an agreement between Foxtel and Game and Fish, though.
There's.
I haven't seen anything signed by both entities that.
They aren't showing it to us, but they've referenced it several times.
Yeah, we've not seen it, but they do reference. Yeah. They don't call it an agreement in what they reference. So what did they call it?
Well, on December 20th, just not that long ago, 32 days ago, the letter that North Dakota Game and Fish sent constantly states recommends, recommendation.
Right.
That doesn't sound like an agreement to me.
And I guess there would be some concern in putting an order, something in the order, that's not founded in the record, or referencing something in the order that's not founded in the record.
And I'm fine with the language of recommendations and that. Foxtel Wind shall consider recommendations made by North Dakota Game and Fish for habitat offsets, however it's worded to that extent.
I think consider is too soft.
Then we're not following back on something that doesn't exist.
You heard my thoughts. I would just take it out and put it in the findings.
I thought the findings made it pretty clear.
Yeah. It said in the letter from Game and Fish that NextEra has committed to a financial contribution. So the word agreement's not used, but...
But it makes it pretty clear that there's a specific...
It says, if you read that...
60%, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah. It says what's in the commitment.
The number of acres and all of that.
Yep.
Yeah.
I guess I would have concerns with any type of enforcement if we put it in the order, then they didn't comply with it if we don't have the actual agreement as part of the record. That would be a concern.
Mm-hmm. Yep, agreed.
So just state it as one of their mitigation measures. We don't reinforce those all in other orders. We don't reinforce all the mitigation measures that they've committed to in the ordering.
No, we expect them to do it, but I mean, we don't.
I'm fine with that. Yeah. I'm fine with that, too.
And I think even with respect to the way this all played itself out, based on what we actually have in the record, I think something to the effect of Foxtel has represented to the commission that it has entered into agreements with these entities or something along those lines to at least address it, since it did become an issue, but without going outside of what we actually have in our physical record for this case.
Okay.
That would be my legal recommendation on it, at least.
That sounds good.
I agree.
You guys have other issues?
I don't.
Okay, me neither. So we'll take a look at the order once you've gone through it, Jerry.
Yeah, let me get through it better and get it done.
Get it revised out to us, and then we can, let's see, our next meeting is the 31st. It's probably, is that next Wednesday?
Yeah.
Maybe it is.
That might be a little soon, but.
Are they eager for this? Are they calling you and asking for it?
Well, they would like to get something moving pretty soon. They want to start getting ready for their spring construction to go. So, let me see how it goes for the 31st.
Probably isn't real, you know, still a couple months before any construction can take place.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. I will say this, you know, and I wouldn't even object if we had to try and look for a special meeting, if it couldn't wait until the next time around. But if we don't have the order that we're kind of settled on, mm-hmm. on Friday, I'll be at SPP on Monday and Tuesday till late afternoon, and we come back in, and then we have a director's meeting. There's a bunch of stuff Tuesday afternoon. I'm just not going to have time
to look stuff going on
through something and be comfortable with it unless we have it by Friday already.
All right. So we'll plan on the next meeting unless there's more of a rush.
Okay.
That's been communicated to Jerry, and we can look at something in between that if necessary.
If it were pressing, I think we could find a,
sure,
a short meeting time and do something outside of a meeting, of a regular meeting. Do something legal in a meeting outside of a regular meeting.
Yes.
Is it Valentine's?
Anything else?
Yeah.
Brian?
Not for me.
Nope.
This work session is concluded. Thank you, everyone.
Thank you.